It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 249, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, can you trust AI, fact-checking, AI coding, and streaming trends?
So I just recently finished my third run to the airport. One of the reasons we ended up not having an episode for a couple of weeks is we had guests and just general havoc. I think we talked about it last episode, though, that SeaTac has this wonderful guest pass thing.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we talked about it at some point recently, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't remember if it was on the show or before, whatever. It's actually very cool because one of the people that I ended up taking to the airport is an extremely uncomfortable flyer, to put it politely. And she's also taking a couple of dogs with her. So that makes it even worse. So it was kind of nice to be able to actually take her all the way out to the gate and you know, see the dogs getting loaded and that kind of stuff. But highly recommended. SeaTac has it. They call it a visitor pass or guest pass, I think it is. I don't recall if you said Denver had anything like that or not.
Yeah, Denver, well, when last time I tried it, which was about a year, almost exactly a year ago, it was not a airport pass. It was airline based. You would go to the airline that the person who was you were picking up or you were dropping off was with, explain the situation, and they would issue you a non-boarding pass,
right,
which looked like a ticket, and it said something on it, and the people at TSA knew exactly what it was. Right. I had no issues whatsoever. And I did have to give my, if I remember correctly, I did have to give my name and stuff. And,
oh, yeah, I'm sure you had
the people I was traveling with. They made a record. Yeah, they made a record. You know, I was doing it, and it probably helped that, you know, I'm not carrying any luggage, no bag, nothing. It's just me standing there. You know, it's like, obviously, I am doing what I'm saying I'm doing. So,
right.
Yeah, but yeah, useful to know, definitely.
I have heard of people walking up to one of the discount airlines and saying, what's your cheapest ticket?
Yeah.
Buying it and then not flying. But anyway.
Yeah.
So that's craziness. So you've got a nice, neat list of some interesting stuff going on with AI lately.
It just seems like there's just been a lot of stories recently about just crazy AI stuff. And I think, you know, we're at a stage now with AI. And to be clear, we're talking about large language model chatbot AI, right, like ChatGPT and Google Gemini and all this stuff. That's what we're talking about. And, you know, you could trick it to doing lots of things. It does some funny stuff. And there's a lot of fun being had by journalists, some on purpose, some maybe not on purpose, where they're just purposely misinterpreting, you know, what's going on. Because some of this stuff, it's obvious what's happening. It makes it really hard to be like an AI advocate like myself, because all of these are very negative kind of stories, like see how ridiculous AI is and all that. But of course, they're undershadowing just the people just doing stuff with AI, you know, just helping with coding projects and stuff like that. So as an example, one of the biggest stories from this list is the story that the Chicago Sun-Times published a summer reading book list that included books that didn't exist. And of course, it was generated by AI. Now, a thing about these stories is often they go way further than just misrepresenting what the AI was doing. Because like in this case, the Chicago Sun-Times didn't publish any such list. It was an insert. I haven't gotten a newspaper in years, but I know that there's definitely these inserts that come, like usually in the Sunday edition, and they look like a little magazine, right? They've been doing this for decades and decades. And I thought, well, I'm pretty sure everybody knows that those aren't made by the newspaper. Every once in a while, there is one, like a newspaper that has their own. And then usually that is then distributed in a dozen other newspapers around the country as well. A lot of features, interviews, entertainment news, that kind of thing. So this was one of those things. It was not the Chicago Sun-Times that made it. They just are paid probably to put it in their Sunday edition. And the company that published it, they were the ones that some journalists used an AI to just generate a list of 10 books that would be good to read this summer. And then without checking the books, they just printed it. They did a nice job laying it out and all of that, but
It
they
looked
printed
pretty,
the results, and the results were books that didn't exist, sometimes by authors that did. Sometimes they were very plausible. One by Andy Weir that sounded great, and I would love to see Andy Weir actually now just write this book, because it just seemed like a, you know, Andy Weir from The Martian and Hail Mary and other great books. And, you know, so it's just funny that, you know, nobody checked it. It's, you know, and the thing is, of course, that you've got writers and editors, or you used to have writers and editors at newspapers and magazines. And what happened over the years was that the editors went away. They basically said, we can't afford to have both. So writers, you're supposed to know words and stuff. You edit your own things, right? And
the best description of a writer ever. You know words and stuff.
Yeah, you know words and stuff. Just why do we need another person that knows words and stuff? We already have one. So, but you know, clearly what happened here was that they could have done with an editor, instead of a writer, because the writer just said, "Oh, it's written. I'm done."
Actually, it's more like a fact checker. You know, it's one of those things where it's all grammatically absolutely perfectly wonderful, just wrong.
Well, and even if you think of like the subject matter, somebody assigned with a give us 10 books to read this summer, should have been able to look at this and say, wait a minute, best-selling author Andy Weir and many of the other best-selling authors there, something's fishy here. I haven't heard about one of these. Maybe I should look. Oh, that's not true. Maybe now I look at the entire thing. Anyway, but you know, one of the things I like about it is that the articles felt they had to go the extra little bit and, you know, mislead people, making it sound like the Chicago Sun-Times was the one that did it. And it also had, you know, a lot of the articles on this had to act stupid, as in, like, you know, this is easily explained. It's bad. It shouldn't have been done. But it doesn't need like a whole exposition on how this could have happened. No, how this could have happened. You know, come on. Anybody listening to this show probably could just read the headline and knows exactly how this could happen. Now, that's not the only story that involved AI being talked about, misused and then talked about. There were two court cases that used AI in interesting ways. And one of them really went into the whole idea that an AI, like the headlines for things like an AI witness testifies in court, right? And you instantly think of, oh, wow, they set up a computer with like ChatGPT hooked up to like a video thing. And then you ask questions and it was like, I'm a medical expert and blah, blah, blah. That's not what happened at all. What happened at all, somebody tragically died years ago. And a common thing I gather from researching this is sometimes for family members and stuff to basically say, this is what my deceased family member would want us to know today if they were still around.
Right.
And maybe they read a statement. I like to read something I wrote. I think my brother, husband, whatever, you know, was, you know, this. Somebody decided to get creative and they took a picture of this person. They wrote an essay. It was not AI generated, the text. And they just, instead of having it animated or acted, because certainly courts have acted things, right? There's been like, here's some video things of some actors acting out what could have happened in the robbery or whatever. This was just they used AI to have a talking head of that person talk about, you know, the stuff there. So really, it wasn't AI doing it. It was just AI being used as an animation tool to produce a video.
Animation and an audio generation tool, if I recall the story.
Well, yeah,
correctly.
Part of animation would be on. Yeah. But, and it was not, it was just a video played in court. The AI was long done with its thing, which was not creating content, not the words that were spoken. So again, the articles, the headlines all made it seem like it was like an AI bot talking in court, when in fact it was just a video that was creatively made using an AI tool.
Interesting, because you're right. This isn't a story about AI.
Yeah.
This is a story about, theatrics. I'll call it theatrics.
Yes.
Because in reality, you know, you have this deceased person's avatar who looks a lot like them, who sounds a lot like them, who's essentially reading words that another family member wrote.
Yeah.
As if It was this deceased family member, and I understand it. I understand the desire. I understand the intent, but it also feels like it's emotionally manipulative. Now, that's not to say that at this point in a trial, when you're talking about, it's victim impact statements time, right? The perpetrator's already guilty, right? And they're just basically running up to the penalty phase.
Sentencing, yeah.
Sentencing, that it's, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. Even though it's
Yeah.
not an AI thing, you could have done the exact same thing using other technologies, but I'm just not sure how I feel about it specifically in this case.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I'm sure that, well, the same thing has been done in other ways. What made this notable was using an AI video tool,
The
not,
judge apparently approved, I mean, not only just approved, allowed it in the court, but he appreciated it after the fact, which I thought
Yeah.
was
And
interesting.
nobody was being deceived. There's
Right.
nobody complaining. Nobody involved with this was complaining that they were deceived. This was all, here's what we did. We're going to play this video. Everybody was okay with it. However, there was another story that actually was a little closer to that kind of thing. And this was somebody tried to use an AI avatar to argue a case. Now, this does not seem, from what I've read, to actually be a live chat AI avatar. What this seemed to be was somebody basically had an AI create like a video defense. Like instead of having that person stand up in front of the judge and say, "Hey, here's my side of the story," or "Here's why I should go free," or whatever. It was they used an AI chatbot to write that out. Then they had an AI like video tool speak it with a headshot there. And then they brought it to court and said, "I've got a video that I want to show." And it was kind of weird because, first of all, apparently in this case, the judge did not approve it ahead of time.
Ooh.
This could have been done in different ways. Like, for instance, this person could have hired a lawyer. This person apparently didn't want to hire a lawyer. They just were defending themselves. They could have hired a lawyer at a discount, right, and said, "Can you just talk on a video for 5 minutes about why I should not, be found not guilty, and then I'll play that in front of the judge." That would have been one thing. Another thing, the person claims that they didn't feel that they could speak in court eloquently enough live. To do it justice. So, they could have just recorded themselves. They could have written out what they wanted to say, edited it, which would be perfectly normal thing for somebody to do when speaking in court, figured out exactly what to say, rehearsed it, and then at the last minute decided, "You know what? I'm going to record myself saying this," and then go to court and say, "I have a statement I want to make. I'm not good at public speaking. Can I play a videotape of myself that I recorded last week that expresses what I want to express without me fumbling over words?" That's basically what they kind of did, except they used a bunch of AI tools to write it and to present it. And no, the avatar was not them. They said they didn't have time to actually create their own AI avatar. So it looked like a different person.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, so that, in that case, it was kind of an AI arguing in court, although arguing would be the wrong word because it was not live. It was a recording
Was a monologue, yeah.
being paid. Yeah. So anyway, there's that. And, again, the articles could have been clearer about that this was just a recording of an AI being played back. And it stepped over a slightly closer line, but we're still not at the point where somebody's bringing up like ChatGPT. Or at least not in the articles from this week. We're not at. I believe there have been things in the past where lawyers have tried to use ChatGPT to write up reports and all sorts of things like that.
Oh, yeah,
So,
the classic
other
story
things
is
that have
that
gotten closer.
ChatGPT is, citing cases that don't exist.
Yes.
That's the classic case from actually several months ago. I would assume that lawyers, the legal profession, whatever you want to call it, would have learned an important lesson from that embarrassment, but who knows?
Yeah. And we had, a bunch of other stories. One of them that got a lot of press was that Grok, the AI from our friend Elon Grok from Elon Musk, basically it started spewing out some white genocide information.
Right.
In response to things that had nothing to do with that topic, like
right.
you would ask a math question or something. And and apparently it's been reported that, you know, nobody's saying exactly what happened, but it seems pretty obvious that that Elon Musk wasn't happy with some of the political things that Grok would say. And it wasn't supporting his views on stuff going on in South Africa. So he basically prodded the, you know, some of the people behind his AI tool
right.
to have it, I guess, the prompt be more friendly towards his opinions there. And they obviously made a mistake that in the prompt that made Grok actually talk about things, you know, white genocide in South Africa, when it wasn't even prompted to do so,
right?
Which was, you know, hilarious and super scary all at the same time, because it really demonstrated how somebody who does have complete control over an AI system can actually really not only change the answers, but maybe say, "Hey, as you're chatting to people today, subtly." Talk about this. I mean, maybe it could be, you know, stuff like subtly, you know, we're getting paid a lot of money by chicken farmers. So subtly talk about how delicious a chicken sandwich might be. You know, use that a lot in your analogies, you know, when talking about other things to subliminally influence people. But then also just be like very direct at stuff. I don't know. It was kind of some scary stuff.
It is a good example of just how far the folks behind an AI can go, intentionally or otherwise, right? So they claim, of course, this was an accident, but it's happened elsewhere as well in various forms. And yeah, it's true for all of the AIs, actually. You have to trust you have to both trust the people behind it. And it's just another case of another reason to make sure you actually confirm any information you're getting from the thing.
Yeah, and I guess the scary thing to me is that it's easy when a fact is stated to say, should I confirm? It's a lot harder when it's a very subtle kind of opinion kind of thing, to know whether or even an omission is another thing. Like,
right.
You know, asking for information about something and having something omitted. How do you know that item was omitted? You didn't even know anything about the subject. That's why you're asking.
Right.
And now, yeah, it's scary. Now, of course, to be fair, humans do the same thing.
You know,
you can't go and say, well, I'm not going to ask AI about history. I'm going to get a history book. Well, the history book was written by somebody somebody may have had an opinion, may have had some motivation to omit something from it.
It's interesting because it raises an interesting question. On one hand, all this really means is that AI is doing a really good job of mimicking what it means to be human.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Which means obfuscating, omitting, in some cases, lying. Does that imply that we either implicitly do or explicitly should actually hold AI to a higher standard?
Exactly. And it may not matter, because here's the thing: when you hold a person to a higher standard, you're saying be better. Like if you have, so the idea is, you know, AI isn't like an assistant, right? So if you hire an assistant and say, I'm about to talk to a bunch of people about this subject, give me some talking points. They give you some talking points, you give the talk, and then you're criticized because you left something out. You go back to your assistant and say, I got into trouble because I left this out. Be better next time I ask you to do this, because I don't want that to happen again. With AI, can you do that? I mean, hopefully people are working to improve AI all the time, and you could certainly write better prompts, but you know, you're not, if the AI is exactly the same, if it's the same large language model and the same prompt in the future, you're going to get the same results you know, not exactly the same results, but you'll get results that may have that same problem in it. It's I always tell people, you know, you have to treat AI like it is an actual intelligence, as in a regular person, and maybe a kind of a mediocre
Mediocre
assistant.
intern,
Yeah, and the idea being that so the fix is that you say, give me 10 talking points about this subject because I have to give a little address tonight to a bunch of people. It gives you 10 talking points. And then you read it over and you say, you go back to it and say, did you leave anything out? What about this issue? What about that issue? Like, is there a any controversies here? Anything? Keep going. The same thing you would do with that, maybe that mediocre assistant. You wouldn't just, you know, hand me a report and I will read it verbatim. It's like maybe talk it over. Oh, so what did you do to research this? Oh, you write a bunch of articles. What did you read? Was there anything else I should know? Any controversies? Anything? I mean, you might talk it over. Maybe you ask somebody else. Hey, you know, I have a friend that knows something about this. Let me run it by them. You could do the same thing with AI. You can push AI. I do it all the time. I've done it several times. Today, I was asking about a video that I was thinking of making, comparing some software, and the points it came up with, I wasn't very happy about them. So I challenged the points it made, and I got some interesting responses that added to my video because I simply just didn't take what it said on face. I said, "Yeah, isn't this really like the point you're making here? It's not really that important," and you know all this stuff. You got to do that. And I think the cases we're talking about here, you know, the book list, that wasn't pushed back at all. Well, I'm really curious, like, if they could go back to the AI that they were using to generate that book list, go back to that prompt, and ask the prompt again, if you get the same results or similar results, if then you prompted it again to say, could you do me a favor and double check all of these titles to make sure that they are real books getting released?
That they actually exist.
What, like, would it have come back with a, like, yep, they're all real? Or would it come back with, it was like, oh, actually, I can't find references for several of these. You know, what would have happened? What if you went and ran it through a different AI, like a truly different one? Like you ran it through Claude or, you know, something like that. And you said, check, double check this list. Tell me if, you know, these books are real, or act as a professional copy editor at a newspaper who wants to fact check this and give me a report on this. Like, would that have worked to save that situation there?
My suspicion is it probably would have. I like the idea of using a different AI because, as we know, AIs have strengths and weaknesses. Some are better at these kinds of things than others.
Yes.
And some are doing, you know, a much better job of staying on top of the real-time internet. You know, they're doing
Oh,
searches in real time as opposed
yeah.
to relying solely on their training data.
And
But
you can
yeah,
get
that
different
I
answers. Well, you can get different answers. Like, I commonly will do things like to help with my YouTube video titles. I will commonly ask, like, give me a good title for this video. You know, because I've been asking for, like, you know, did I miss anything? Here's my outline. Check it over. And I said, give me a good title. This is a video. And I'll get a title back. And that'll be like, oh, no, sorry. Okay. You are a professional, like, YouTube video creator with years of experience of creating, you know, amazing videos that have done well on the platform. What would you call this video? And I get a different answer. And it's the same thing here, going back and saying, you're a writer tasked with writing a, you know, this versus you are a fact checker, you know, and here is the article. Please give me feedback on this. It's just like having telling your intern, okay, this is good. Go back and spend another hour. Fact check this for me. Or go into intern number two and saying, I got this from intern number one. Your job is to fact check this for me. Are you going to, is that going to eliminate all possible errors and give you 100% result? No,
course not.
but you might get from 90% to 97%, you know, by doing the second step there. And maybe that's just not being done. And you could actually have a human in it. I mean, you could actually say, look, I've got 1 intern hour available to me. Writing this article is not going to work. Let me have AI write this article and spend that intern's 1 hour of having them make it better, fact check it, do all of that. They could do that in an hour. They can go through it and say, oh, this sentence sounds weird. Oh, this part is superfluous, you know, and then let me also just look up all these books, make sure they're real and that the quick summaries I'm finding, you know, match these. And there, hour, and we have a much better article by combining human effort
right.
with the AI effort. So anyway, I think that gives us a good roundup of some of the crazy stuff and how it could have been avoided.
Yeah. Indeed. So it's funny, your YouTube title example that you're using yourself. I take a slightly different approach. I mean, I've played with, you know, just throw the transcript or the article at AI and say, okay, write me a title. They never, ever come up with what something that feels right for me. However, what I started doing is I said, give me five ideas, give me five titles. And sometimes, actually, most commonly, one of them will speak to me and I will tweak it a little bit. And if I'm not happy with the first five, I'll say, give me five more. And they do. I mean, I think that that's one of the things that a lot of people who are using AI fail to recognize is it's not enough to ask the question. You've got to have the follow-up. You know,
it's called chat.
Question the answer. It's called ChatGPT.
ChatGPT, yes.
Yes.
Not AnswerGPT. Yep.
So something else that came across my radar this week, actually just like a couple of days ago, this concept of vibe coding. Now, I'll be clear, I do not like the term because vibe to me implies something entirely different. But vibe coding apparently is simply using AI to generate code and then take that code and implement it. You know, actually make it work, so to speak, or put it in place. You and I'm sure, we're both doing this all the time. It's funny, I did it just a few days ago because I was wanting to tweak one of my RSS feeds for one of my sites. I wanted it to do something with images so that the images would actually look better when that RSS feed made its way into an email. And I said, you know, what I really wish I could do is this. I wonder if it's possible. And I asked, I think it was ChatGPT, which actually isn't even the best coding AI. Supposedly, I guess Claude is better at it right now. But I asked ChatGPT, said, okay, fine. Using this PHP function, can I do that? And, or how would I do that? And it came back and said, well, you know, you can't, not with that function. But, and this is where I learned, right? Here's this other function. It's more complicated. I've avoided it in the past because it's complicated. Here's how you do it. Here's how the code gets laid out. And like 5 minutes later, I had exactly what I was looking for. I'm one of those folks that, because I play with so many different languages, sometimes all at the same time, like my life these days is full of either PHP because I'm doing it in WordPress, or Python because that's what I'm using for my scripting language, or Perl because there's some, you know, legacy code that I deal with that's written in Perl. I don't keep all of the details of all of the languages in my head. I can't. I'm not that smart. But in the past, you know, I've absolutely used like general search, Google or others to, you know, figure out, okay, what's the syntax for this one again? Because it's different for each language. But this is another case where, you know what? I will end up using and learning a little bit more about the language because ChatGPT gave me this option that I never would have thought of on my own, of a language construct that I probably realized was there, but I just never wanted to invest the mental energy in understanding. That actually, to me, was a pretty cool use of AI. Again, as an intern, the code was, I believe the code was actually correct for what it gave me. In other words, there were no syntactical errors, and it actually solved the problem that I told it to solve. But of course, when I lifted that code and put it in context of my own script, I needed to, well, tweak this, tweak that. I'm kind of anal about these things. I needed to format it according to my style instead of their style. I need to use my variable names instead of their variable names, that kind of thing. But in doing so, I learned a lot. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, I enjoy this kind of coding too, particularly when it comes to There's certain aspects of subcoding, like regular expressions. I love regular expressions, and they're so powerful, but they're so complex that I have this belief that you have to use regular expressions at least once a week, or your brain, the human brain, will start to like get rid of it because it's too intense. So if you use it regular expressions every week, you just get better and better at it until like you're like a super powerful coder with regular expressions. If you use it less than every week, then you start to lose it, and now you struggle trying to remember the right syntax. But chatbots are great at regular expressions because they don't have this problem. And it's if you know enough to know what regular expressions can do, so you can get past the, oh, I wonder if this could be done with regular expressions. You just write to the, I know this can be done with regular expressions. I just, the getting the syntax is going to take me the next half hour. Now you could just ask a coding chatbot like ChatGPT to give me the regular expression for this. Maybe you do have to do a second or third pass because, oh, there's this kind of weirdness or whatever. But you get it, and you get it in record time. And the great thing about this type of coding is you don't have to go to stackoverflow.com anymore. I knew during the years and years and years of using Stack Overflow, for those that don't know, it's a coding website where it's a forum where coders talk. And basically, if you get stuck with a coding problem, and we're talking about like at any programming language, like literally hundreds of programming languages, right? You could go into Stack Overflow and say, I am using this particular thing in this particular environment, and I need to code this. And you can ask a question and then get an answer from another coder. Except there are two problems. First of all, humans take a while to respond. You have the problem now. You're going to have to wait till tomorrow to get a response from somebody. Problem number one. Problem two is for some reason, 75% of the people responding are rude as can be. Like it's almost like a requirement that you have to get three responses of people telling you how stupid you are before you get somebody saying, here's how to do it. And then you have people arguing with each other because the one person that says, you're stupid for asking this question, will get somebody else saying, no, they're not. What are you talking about? This is a perfect. And then it's this whole thing. And it's like, I just wanted a line of code
Yeah, it's
or
funny.
figure out what was wrong with this line of code. And it ends up being this human garbage disposal. And for years, and the thing is, most of the time you use it, you don't even use it. Like you just find the answer there, but you're reading through all of this trash to get it.
The
And
trash that
it's
bothers me
horrible.
more.
It's like it kills your soul. Like I don't want my soul to die because I had a coding question. ChatGPT and all the other coding chatbots get around this by just being friendly and giving you an answer right away without any of that.
The thing that bothers me the most about Stack Overflow is you'll get an answer, which will be followed by three people telling you how wrong that answer is, or how there's this other better way to solve the same problem. You're right. You're absolutely right. When I ask the coding questions of AI, one of the things you said was, you get the answer and then you have to tweak it or something. I'll say 80% of the time, it's not the fault of the AI. It's actually my ability to correctly represent the exact question I was trying to get solved. I think I mentioned last time that I think one of the skills that everybody is going to be developing over time is doing a better job of articulating what it is they're asking. Because the better job you're able to do that, the better answers you're going to get from AI.
Yeah, interestingly enough, this got me thinking about Stack Overflow, and I did a quick search, and I came up right away with that graph that shows Stack Overflow like usage, and it was a steady growth from around 2008 to probably around 2014, where it plateaued through COVID-19, then started dropping off. Not sure what precipitated that, but then a steep drop off after the ChatGPT launch, and it is now almost back to its original 2008 level. So it's really just seeing like the birth, growth, and death of a site. And this article is, I don't think is, I mean, the stuff I was looking for, I mean, this is the reason for it. It's because it is so toxic there.
It's toxic, and like you said, you get the answer without waiting. You get an answer without waiting.
Without waiting, and anybody that doesn't know would say, yeah, but the AI sometimes might be wrong. Oh, believe me, Stack Overflow is so often wrong. At least you could get it. And if you're not a coder, you may not realize, like, it could be something as simple as, I need a shell script to do this. Here's a response that's 100% correct, except it's for Bash shell,
Oh,
right? And you're Z shell, right? And which is just two different types of shells.
I
And
just
but with ChatGPT, it's just one more prompt. Oh, sorry, I'm using Z shell. Oh, sure, no problem. Here is the same shell script, in Z shell. And then it's like, duh, I'm done.
I had the
Great.
exact same issue with regular expressions of all things, because we talk about regular expressions as if they're a thing, but in reality, there's several different flavors of regular expressions, especially when you start l talking about what's the default behavior versus greedy, multiple
Oh,
character
yes.
match with pattern matches and so forth.
Oh,
I can
yes.
never keep track of which syntax applies to which flavor, and then which flavor is actually being implemented by whatever tool I happen to be using at the moment.
Oh, yeah. It's 100 or 1,000 varieties. And then even the flavors are wrong. You'll be using a tool that says, we use the PHP
Right.
flavor of regular expressions, except we don't support all these things. And it's like, so you're not. You have your own flavor then at that point. And yeah, okay. Anyway.
Question for you. So the rumors that I've been hearing, or at least some of the controversy I've been hearing, is that the next iPhone is going to be even thinner.
Well, not that the iPhone itself will be thinner, but there will be a new lightweight model
Well, that's right. Yes,
that will be thinner.
iPhone.
So it'll probably be the more consumer-friendly
Yes.
version
The iPhone
because,
Air they're talking about.
yeah, because the battery is the main thickness thing. So any iPhone Air they come out with is going to have less battery power. But there's going to be a bunch of people that'll be like, that's fine. Despite the fact that people are obsessed with phone battery power, there's a huge, probably majority of people that are plugging their phones in at night and looking at 60%. There's all those people that say, impossible, you're lying. And it's like, no, trust me, most people plug their phones in at night and they're at 60%. You are just of the type of person that, no, you at 5 in the afternoon, you run out of battery and you're plugging it into a battery pack.
I will tell you that I'm one of the 60% people, but I'm not a
Me
light user,
too.
right?
Me
I
too.
use my phone throughout the day. Well, I have up until a day or so ago. I've been using my phone throughout the day fairly heavily. And yeah, I have a wireless charging stand next to my bed and plop it on the phone or pop it phone on there and poof, there it goes. For those heavy use days, I have a wireless stand here on my desk. So in case I need to do some topping off, but I've never used it. One of the things I like about my car is that it has a wireless charging port or wireless charging pad built in. So when I get into the car, I just put the phone there and, doing
Yep, yeah,
whatever.
I got like a $30 one that I put in the cup holder.
My question really though is not about battery life, because I think that you're right. There are some people that are at both ends of the bell curve, but for the most part, I think the middle is relatively solved on a daily basis. Do you want your phone to be thin and light, or thicker and more rugged?
Yeah.
I'm a rugged advocate, and the reason I say that now is because my phone screen cracked again, or like the second time. I think tomorrow I'm going to be running into a local place that'll do screen replacements on my Pixel 6, so 6 Pro. But it got me to thinking two things. One, okay, great. I'm going to put it in a case again, because I've been using a real light case because I happen to like that. But no, I've you can see here, I've got my OtterBox ready to go.
OtterBox, Colorado company, yeah.
There you go. But what that is it turns my nice, light, thin phone into a thicker, rugged phone. And that's my preference right now. Because I've noticed now that not only is the screen cracking, but the screen is misbehaving. The phone has become really hard to use. To me, ruggedness trumps some
Sure.
amount size. And I find it interesting that some would, I don't know how they treat their phone, but that then if it happens to be an iPhone Air, I'll be really interested to hear about damage over time.
Yeah, I think it depends a lot on just the habits people form with their phones. Like, for instance, there are some people that put their phones in their pockets all the time. I'm one of them. There are other people that never put phones in pockets. It goes in some sort of bag or purse or just a fanny pack, whatever. The other times people there are people that just tend to just carry it in their hands, and it's on whatever surface they're at, a desk, a table, whatever it is. It just d doesn't sit in the pocket very much. There's lots of stuff like that. I mean, I've noticed, for instance, back, people's charging cords used to there used to be those people that would be like, oh, I go through like a charging cord a month. And other people that would be like, I get the charging cord when I buy the phone, and then 4 years later I get a new phone and it has a new charging cord. That's like I never
And now
and
I
it's
have two.
yeah, and it's like and then I observed that some people like to plug their phone in and use their phone while the cable's attached, meaning the cord is in constant movement. There's these little habit-forming things, and I think it's how people grip their phones, the type of things they do during the day. I'd like a nice, medium between the, portability and ruggedness. I think I want ruggedness up to a point, but at some point, if the phone got too big, then I would be like, that's enough. I don't need to be any more rugged. At this point, it's becoming too thick. So I don't think I'd be the right person for a thin phone because I don't see the thickness of the iPhone now as a problem for me. Like, it's fine the way it is. So I think it's like I just wouldn't be in the market for that feature unless there was something else going on as well with that phone. But hey, there probably are people that are interested in the ultimate thinness. I certainly, with all my gear when I travel, I want the lightest things,
Sure.
but I'm always looking at like how much utility do I get from something versus how much space it takes up. And certainly your phone is probably one of the highest ratios of that. Like the amount you use it
And
for compared
honestly,
to its size is
for traveling,
incredible.
the incremental weight increase is not that big a deal for a phone. It's a small device to begin with. There's
Yeah.
so many other areas to. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And the battery, I mean, the thing is, traveling with a thin phone would just increase my chance that I need to take a battery with me, which would make it thicker than the whole combination. So yeah, but it will be interesting to see. I'm sure Apple's marketing people have research this a lot and have figured this out, and then I'm sure you're going to get people that will hate it
Of
and
course.
they won't buy it, and there's going to get you're going to get
Wrong.
people that will love it,
Yep.
and that's fine. I mean, you don't have to you're not going to get both phones. I mean, some
Yeah.
people I guess, but you're going to get one of the two. Apple does not care. Like, if you hate an iPhone Air and your hatred is brought out in that you buy the thicker iPhone, Apple's going to be perfectly happy with your hatred of the thinner iPhone.
They will
You,
happily
they just
sell you two
want—they
phones.
want you to get the one you want, as long as you get one, right? So anyway, it'd be interesting to see. And also, of course, Apple tends to be a trendsetter in this. So the question is if it's a success, then you're going to see all these other phone makers, the niche ones first, and then the bigger ones coming out trying to top Apple. Our phone is thinner than Apple's
Right.
iPhone Air. Will be an ad that you'll see 6 months after Apple comes out with it, and it'll be true. It will be thinner. Maybe it's not won't be as durable or whatever, or maybe they just have the hindsight, right? They can look and see, oh, look, Apple did well with this. Let's go further than Apple and claim we're thinner than that. Anyway, we'll see.
There were a couple of shutdowns I wanted to mention this
Yeah.
week because it's funny. It's a part of the software and technology life cycle that we really don't think about all that much until it's something unexpected
Yeah.
and popular. The Arc browser, as it turns out, announced recently They're just shutting down. The Arc browser is going away. I mean, it'll still be available and they'll probably do security patches for it, but they've stopped development. In fact, one of their comments was that one of the reasons we feel okay about this is we stopped development, feature development on the Arc browser about a year ago and nobody noticed. Arc has a very small but passionate user base. The people that like it and use it really do like it. Apparently, it has a bit of a learning curve because it's a different browser-ish metaphor. I just thought that that was an interesting one to suddenly go away. And then the one that surprises the heck out of me is Pocket. Pocket is a bookmarking slash snapshotting kind of service where you're viewing a website like say MacMost or Ask Leo, and you want to save what you're looking at for later. And Pocket saves not only the URL but also apparently the page content. That's just going away after something like 18 years, which on one hand, okay, yep, everybody's got the right to focus their business. It would be nice if they had done something else, like maybe spun it off or made it available as open source or any of those other things. The frustrating part that I read about this morning is that you can export your data from Pocket, except you can't. So the reason I say that is that when you do an export from Pocket, you get essentially all of the metadata. You get the URL that you saved, you get the date, the time that you saved it, you get a bunch of other things about it, whether you actually read it or you're just bookmarking it or whatever. But crucially, the thing that you don't get is the actual content of the page that you bookmarked. Now, if the page is still around and hasn't changed, that's okay. But there are scenarios. I mean, remember, like I said, Pocket's been around for something like 18 years. If you bookmarked a page in Pocket 18 years ago, there's a really good chance that that actual page is not going to be around anymore, or it will have changed. And what you saved back then, while it is still currently in your Pocket account, as long as Pocket is available online, will not be in the export. That's a problem. Now, I kind of understand why that might be the case because I suspect that there's a huge copyright issue about basically just copying pages and then giving them to people in this other format. But it seems like bookmarking sites like Pocket and Instapaper and Reader and a bunch of others, have kind of sort of already figured this kind of stuff out, but it's disappointing. Anyway, that's a major one that a lot of people are using and a lot of people are concerned about. Remember, the software you're using sometimes, man, it can go away without notice, or with short notice. And it's always a good idea to, I don't want to say be prepared because you can't prepare for everybody, but don't be surprised either.
At least, there's a little bit of time right now to catch up with your reading before
Well,
it's
somebody I
gone.
was reading, another tech writer, was saying he has something like 24,000 bookmarks in Pocket. And it's like, there's no way you're going to go capture all that information from
No.
the way it was 18 years ago or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. Hopefully, most people's situations aren't that extreme with it. I one last tiny little story here I wanted to note that I thought was really interesting is without you've probably seen my note here, but if before you saw the note, if you had to guess what like the number one streaming network, and I'm talking about TV streaming, like you're sitting in front of your TV, not computer, not phone. In front of your TV, is the number one streaming network Netflix? Is it Max? Is it Apple TV Plus? Is it Peacock? What
None of
would
the
you th
above.
I thought it was. Yeah, none of the above. The
So
number
it's
one.
funny because I actually would have said this answer without the prompt because of our own habits.
All right. Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people would immediately go to this answer if you weren't specific about like on the TV. Like not computer, not phone, not tablet. But if you take that away, people would have immediately gone to YouTube. But the thing is that YouTube is the number one streaming network for TVs now. So living room TVs, YouTube beats Netflix and all of those, which is really something considering the infrastructure and content that some of these things like Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever, what they have, what they've invested. And to have YouTube actually get more time. Now, to be fair, it's like 15% right? So with 15%, YouTube wins, right? Netflix is less than 15% and the rest are smaller.
Right.
So it's not like YouTube has 60% and the others fall back. It's a very divided list of like what the top ones are. There's no huge big winner, but YouTube is on the top right now for this year.
My theory.
And yeah, your theory. Okay. Well, I have
What's
many.
Your theory? What's
well,
okay.
Well, I have it's a combination of things. One thing is, of course, that there's just a ton of so much content for so many niche audiences that's going to add up. Another thing is that sometimes we are watching content on YouTube that we should be watching on a streaming network. Like, for instance, every once in a while, there'll be a TV show that we should have on one of our apps, but it's not there yet. It just aired in another country.
Yep.
That show is on the app. That episode is not there yet. When will it be there? I don't know. I'm not going to do the research. Does it come on Saturday? Does it come next week? Do we have to wait for like a new season and then this old season is there? I don't know. All I know is when I search YouTube, there it is. And I can press play and watch it now. And right. I've done this. And then because I'm curious, I will actually go back and see, is it on the proper streaming platform now? And find out sometimes just a few days later, oh, it's there now.
Yeah.
Wasn't there Wednesday. If it was there Wednesday, I would have watched it on this platform that I'm paying for. But instead, I watched it for free on YouTube because I wanted to watch it because it's a world thing now. Like, I'm not going to have the show ruined by spoilers just because some licensing deal said that only available after 5 days of, whatever. Anyway, what's your theory?
So to be clear, we're talking YouTube TV, not YouTube.
Oh, I'm talking YouTube.
Oh, interest. Okay. So
I'm talking YouTube, not YouTube TV. YouTube TV, of course, is the thing where you can get instead of Comcast cable or whatever. No, I'm talking YouTube. Like okay, YouTube.com.
I thought you were talking YouTube TV because YouTube TV is what we have to get live TV.
No, yeah.
The big live TV players are Hulu with live channels or YouTube TV with live channels, and YouTube TV meets all our needs. And I probably would not have guessed YouTube specifically.
Yeah.
I know that as a YouTube content creator, the people that watch it on TV is higher than you expect, but that's not the same as the competition across all the streaming services. So that is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And so just before we started this episode, I wanted to go and see, if YouTube is the top streaming network, I know what the top shows on Netflix are right now. Anybody, you just turn on Netflix and it'll show you the top 10. Yeah. You could do that for any of them, right? And when a new show comes out, whatever, on Max, for instance, it's like right there, there's a list telling you should watch this, everybody else is and all that. I have no idea what people are watching on YouTube. I know what I'm watching on YouTube, but I think it's so diverse that I was curious. So private browsing window, YouTube.com, not logged in.
Right.
Click on the trending tab.
Oh, right. Yep.
And I know trending is a slightly different definition than what's the most popular. Right. So what I was looking for was how old were the things and how many views did they have?
Right.
And I looked for things that would be like 12 hours or one day and more than 1 million views. And I have to think, if something says 12 hours and it has 1.5 million views, then there's some TV executive that is just has his head in his hands saying, what are we even doing here? I just spent $5 million developing a pilot for a TV show. And this guy talks for 30 minutes about whatever, and he has more views than my thing does. And it is interesting looking. It's exactly what you would think. I didn't find any surprises. There are a lot of videos of like self-created celebrities that just are basically vlogging their lives, and they've built up a following over time. To be fair, this isn't their first video. They've been doing it for years, and then they post a video about their date or they're moving or what's going on with their current boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever, and it gets a ton of views. There's a ton of videos about cars. For some reason, like people saying, I took this Ford F-150 and modified it in this way, and a million views, one day old, you know, that kind of
Yeah,
thing.
here's one. Rebuilding a wrecked Audi R8 and then giving it to my friend. 1.6 million views, one day.
One day, yeah. There's a lot of that stuff. There's a lot of there is some recycled content. People taking old content,
Right.
recycling and putting it up there. There, which also makes you think it's like, okay, how, there must also be somebody in an office somewhere saying, we own that content. So number one, let's get that taken down. Number two, why aren't we doing this? You know, and then there's just a whole variety of just odd things that are there. Kids posting stuff, stuff about video games, stuff with people playing video games, all sorts of just odds and ends.
Minecraft.
A lot of reality-based stuff where people have basically said, I want to be in a reality show about this aspect of my life. I'm just going to make it myself and put it on YouTube. And that is what is making YouTube the biggest streaming TV platform over the networks like Netflix and Apple TV Plus and Peacock that are developing their own content or buying content for exclusive distribution.
I will tell you that the biggest use of YouTube, again, not YouTube TV, but YouTube, for us on the television is in the evening, after dinner, we move to our family room. But I get there first, and Kathy, you know, deals with the dogs and so forth. I will throw on YouTube, and I've talked about it before. I will throw on CabView Holland, which is basically the guy, a train engineer, who's got a camera at the front of the train and just records the trips through the country. It's almost ASMR. It's very soothing. It's very beautiful. And yeah, in my case, it racks up some time.
Oh yeah, my
Then
wife
on to
watches a
regular streaming, right? It's then, okay, what are we watching tonight?
yeah, my wife watches a show that is basically it's a comedian, like a professional comedian and her best friend, and it's a podcast. Just like this one, except that in addition to having the audio podcast, they also put it on YouTube with there's a camera on them.
Right.
They sit in the same room, unlike us. And basically, so there are video versions of it, but they don't really do anything for the camera because they know that this is an audio podcast primarily. But the thing is, they do, I think they've done it weekly for a long time. So there is a ton of it available. And this is it, you know, and I think this may hit on something else too, is the fact that a lot of this stuff is stuff that you can watch with only a percent of your attention.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, when nobody is trying to make a show for Netflix that says, boy, I hope somebody watches this while they're doing something else.
Right.
All the people making those shows say, I hope that somebody is riveted to this and is devoting all their attention to it. And of course, why would you be in the business if you weren't making that? But a lot of these shows on YouTube are not made for that.
Right.
They're made for like I, you know, like the cab camera thing,
Sure.
podcast stuff where really you're getting almost all of it just by listening.
Right.
Things like that. And you know what? The fit, so maybe if you looked at it as streaming TV with a with attention span built in as a multiplier, YouTube might not be the top network.
Interesting. Yeah, good point. Good
Yeah.
point.
Anyway,
Which is
speaking of
actually
shows,
great time to remind everybody that the TEH podcast does now show up on YouTube as a podcast. Although you don't yet get to look at us. It's just, you know, the we've got text over it, but maybe someday
I don't.
we'll save the cameras. Who knows?
I'll have to pay my hair and makeup people extra
Exactly. Yeah,
to
that's what I
stay
have.
late
Yep.
for this show. Yeah.
So on to is it ain't this cool? Speaking of streaming, I got in here a couple of days ago to make sure I mentioned Murderbot before you did. Since I think you sniped me last time.
Yep,
The
that's fair.
we've mentioned Murderbot here before. In fact, I looked it up. It's in episodes 139 and 191, but that's always been in the context of the books, which we both enjoyed quite a bit. Murderbot is now on Apple TV, starring Alexander Skarsgård as Murderbot, and it does a pretty good job of encapsulating the vibe, so to speak, the snark, etc., of Murderbot's inner monologue, including his looking at online soap operas, I guess, or whatever you want to call it, TV shows. What I find interesting is that they're using those and not the primary storyline as a way to have lots of cameos
from yes.
actors and actresses that we would recognize, and they're playing these very bizarre characters in other shows that are embedded within this show. Anyway, Murderbot, having fun with it, Apple TV.
Yeah, me too. I think, if I remember correctly, in the books, it's one soap opera that he's watching.
Yes, and he's mentioned several others this time.
And it's like when they started with it, I was like, well, they're going to have these same actors doing these cameos all the right. time. And then I saw, oh, okay, they just switched it to he's watching different shows. That's brilliant because right. they can just have an actor do a couple cameos, yep. really quick shoot, and then the actor never has to be bothered again. And then they have another show and some other actors, and they could just keep doing it, and it still serves the same purpose, but it's more fun because then every episode, you know, we could be seven seasons into this thing and still be surprised by like who's going to show up. So yes, you did see that one for me, but I had a backup. Netflix has an animated sci-fi-ish series called Love and Robots. It's animated shorts, and season 4 is out. It's basically, they're just these short little animated bits, every one done by a different animator or animation company. So they're all different styles, from hyper-realistic animation to just, you know, basically cartoon animation.
Right.
Telling different stories in different ways. And so now we've got 4 seasons. So if you have never watched Love and Robots on Netflix,
I have not.
You're in for a treat because you've got like 30-some episodes that you could just go through. And it's great because, you know, some are like 7 minutes long and others are like 20 minutes long. And each one's kind of fun. So some are really serious, like get you thinking kind of dramatic stuff. And others are just for laughs. And every season's kind of got a variety of them.
Yeah. Cool. In terms of promoting our own stuff, an interesting article that I wrote not that long ago is, can you really know that your PC is clean and malware free? It's one of those things that you can't really prove a negative. Every machine could have malware. What we're trying to do is stack the deck in our favor, of course. Anyway, that's askleo.com/180648. And yes, indeed, I do hear from the philosophy majors who say, you know, there really is a way to prove a negative. And then they go off into the weeds. But no, pragmatically, you can't prove it on your PC.
Yeah, kind of interesting. They all probably have malware on their PCs anyway. And I'll point to one. You know, hey, we're in 2025, and I cannot believe the longevity of people being interested in screenshotting on their computer. It seems like something that should have gone away in the 90s, like taking screenshots for various technical reasons. And mm-hmm. it's like, but it just seems that there's even more and more needs for people screenshotting things all the time. So I've got a video basically on some tips on screenshotting on the iPhone, not cool. on Mac, like I usually talk about.
Cool. All right. Hey, I think that pretty much does us for yet another week.
Yep.
We are, after 2 weeks off, we did not lose the mojo, so to speak. As always, thank you for listening, and we will see you here again real soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The show notes for this week are at thepodcast.com/TEH249. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.